Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman with Fred Jackson and Steve Paisley Jordahl joins us now. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
And Brother Ray Pritchard's in Kansas City. How's the weather today in Kansas City?
Oh, gorgeous, gorgeous. Maybe 74, wow. 75. Yeah, bright, sunny skies.
So you're going to ride an extra 10 miles today?
I'm hoping to. We'll see. I got to travel tomorrow, so you never know the day before a trip. But, yeah, if
okay.
I can.
Okay, you got to get on a plane tomorrow?
Yeah.
Going so where you go from where to where to where?
Here to Detroit to Albany, New York.
It's from Detroit to Albany. What's that, 2 hours? Hour and a half?
Let's see.
Something like that?
No more. If you count the layover, so it's about a 4.5 hours. 4.5 hours to get from here to Albany. Not too bad.
Yeah. What lake do you fly over there? I know Michigan.
Yeah, one of them. maybe two of them. Right?
Lake Ontario. Okay. Lake Ontario.
How about Erie? Erie. That's one of them, right, Fred? Help me out, Fred. That's one of them,
well,
right?
Well, if you fly from Detroit, you would fly, I think, over the western side of Lake Ontario.
That sounds right.
Yep.
My answer to that question would be, I get on the plane, they take me there, I get off the plane.
That's exactly.
I don't know.
You don't pay attention to
that. I don't know.
You just trust. Steve is a very trusting person.
I am.
That's right.
I am.
He trusts the pilots to go the right way.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was reading the other day, Ray, where, and gentlemen, not that Ray's not a gentleman, but that sounded
thank
bad.
Thank you so much.
I'm sorry, that sounded bad. Ray and the gentleman here. We're starting to experience some shortages of air traffic controllers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is in part causing the flight delays. It isn't, quote, the airline's fault or the pilot's fault or a lot of times it's you don't, you know, you, I mean, you can't. You have to have air traffic controllers or you just can't fly.
It's air traffic controllers. It's pilots. You've got a whole generation of pilots.
Mm-hmm.
They are forced to retire the 60 age limit. And
you've done this before. You know what I'm talking about being up in the and listening to the communication between pilots and air traffic control.
Correct.
Which I find fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an aviator myself. You are, Fred. You were in the Canadian Air Force,
uh-huh.
but I've been up in enough planes, especially and some private planes where you hear people communicate, and they'll track you from one destination
to the other. You flight plan before you take off.
Okay, and commercial airlines do this,
yes,
too, right? Everybody has to do this, commercial and private. Okay,
well, if you want to see why you need air traffic control. Yeah. Invite our listeners to go to flightaware.com. We are in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Flightaware.com? Okay.
Yes, it's fascinating. I'm showing you right now. This is the current situation over our home base of Tupelo.
Okay.
Look at the planes.
Wow. And we're looking at a third of the country here from Michigan down to the Gulf Coast. You're showing me.
Look at the planes. That's why
hundreds of them.
That's why you need air traffic control.
Yeah, look at Atlanta and Dallas.
Yes,
you go to one on top of
that jam up right there is Atlanta.
Yeah, well, Atlanta is the busiest airport in the world.
Yes,
by flight number and by people that go through the airport. Did you know that, Ray?
Yeah, I was just there a couple of weeks ago.
You totally saw it firsthand.
Yes. It's been crowded every time I've ever been through the Atlanta airport.
Yeah, never stops. Charlotte's busy now. Chicago's always been busy.
Right. But all those planes, and that doesn't include private planes.
Yeah.
Maybe it does.
These would be, for the most part,
commercial.
Those who are under instrument rules. Because they're at 30,000, 36,000 feet.
Right.
And air traffic control has to look at this, and then you have bad weather. And then you all guys are all, these pilots start saying, we got bad weather ahead of us. I want to redirect over here. That's when it really gets messy.
Oh, then somebody, some air traffic controller has to
clear you
to do that.
Clear you to do that. Yeah, I need a 20-degree turn here to get around this thunderstorm. It's a mess.
I wouldn't want that job at all. You talk about, huh?
Yeah.
Talk about high stress.
Talk about high stress, especially, you know, you take Atlanta, for instance. You got all those planes descending in to Atlanta, and then you got some taking off. And the air traffic control has to keep all that sorted.
I had a friend who was an air traffic controller at O'Hare for like 20 years. Yeah. Yeah, he retired. Mm-hmm. But Chicago O'Hare, yeah. One of the busiest airports in the world as well.
Yeah.
And he was an air traffic controller.
Yes.
And, you know, that's a job you can't, you know, you got to be on your A game every day, all day, right? Yes,
absolutely.
All right, you're listening. What was that movie with John Candy when there was the scene, and he was an air traffic controller in the movie. It was a comedy, but he was looking at his screen as an air traffic controller. This is John Candy, the late John Candy. He was, like, really focused on it, and he was – really under stress, and he was showing it in duress, and then he realized that on his screen he was looking at a fly. it was you know what I'm saying,
an unknown plane.
Yeah, it was a fly that was in the building. It wasn't an unknown plane, and he had to swat it off his screen. Anyway, I forgot what movie that was. All right, Steve, it's all yours.
Well,
Take it away.
I went to FlightAware at my boss's suggestion, and I'm going to have nightmares of ants now.
Ants?
Because the planes move on this thing.
Yes, they do.
Wow. All right. Hey, the Republican-controlled House Judiciary Committee will be holding a hearing today in Chicago to talk about crime and violence in the Windy City and other large cities. What's interesting about this is that no Democrats have decided to join the hearing. This is the House Judiciary Committee. There are Democrats on the committee. They're all abandoning the committee. A lot of people are saying, if Black Lives Matter, why aren't they here? Because a lot of the people that are being killed in Chicago violence are African Americans.
In fact, you bring that up, 80% of the murder victims in Chicago are Black,
yes,
African American people.
Well, I wanted you to hear from one of the people that's going to be there. His brother was killed. His name is Gianno Caldwell. You may have heard him on Fox. Mm-hmm. And his brother was killed murdered in Chicago. He's going to be testifying at this hearing. And he's a little distressed that there are no Democrats showing up, too. Cut 7.
Democrats refuse to show up here today. Chicago is a city of 2.7 million people. 29% of that population is Black. Last year, 80% of the murder victims were Black. Wouldn't you think the people who have been screaming Black Lives Matter would be here to show that Black lives truly matter? Congressman Danny Davis, who's a sitting congressman here in Chicago, recently said, well, what they're doing here is a stunt. Well, really? Congressman Danny Davis? It's a stunt? And was that 7-year-old who was murdered in the backseat of a car in a drive-thru at McDonald's? Is that a stunt? How about the 5-month-old who was murdered on the same day as my brother, Cecilia, June 24? Is that a stunt? How about 3 days ago? 86-year-old man carjacked, murdered in the streets of Chicago. Is that a stunt, Congressman Danny Davis? It is not.
He was passionate. I saw this interview this morning. Gianno Caldwell, he was passionate about this. And one of the reasons is his little brother was murdered there in Chicago. But he's exactly right. It is a Democrat-run city, but the Democrats who sit on that Judiciary Committee refuse to go to this hearing today.
Now, what's the hearing about?
It's the House Judiciary Committee.
In Washington.
Looking at the crime, the plague of crime, plague of violent crime in Chicago. Last weekend alone, you were pointing this out a while ago, Tim, 30 shootings.
It's every weekend. It's just like that, right?
In Chicago. It's
usually horrible. 5 to 10 deaths, maybe more, every weekend.
It's a Democrat-controlled city.
Yeah, it's gang violence. Basically, it's black on black crime. In terms of ethnicity, I mean, it's not a white black thing, or it's a very dangerous, unsafe place for the citizens who happen to live in Chicago, Ray. And the majority of them are black, and then the majority of the people committing the crimes are black. That's just the way it is.
If you just took the crime statistics from, say, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, 10 years ago, compare them to today, they're not just up. They're up astronomically. Right. Car burglaries, up astronomically. Home invasions, up astronomically. Shootings, up astronomically. Murder in Chicago, basically, at an all-time high. So all the way across the board, things were out of control. And Chicago, unfortunately, is becoming like San Francisco and some of the other great cities.
You lived there for how many years? 20?
17 years.
17 years. Where in Chicago?
Oak Park, a suburb right up against the west side of the city of Chicago. All I can say is things were a lot different in Chicago. Richard Daley, not the old man, but the son, was the mayor then and kept things fairly well in order. Things were different 33 years ago than they are today. And honestly, I do not. It's not that I think that the people of Chicago do not want to be safe. They do. It's that they have elected, they put the Democrats into power for the better part of a century, or maybe for an entire century. And this now is what
it's a one party yes. city.
It's one party that, city.
That's usually not healthy for anybody. To have only
and it has moved to the left.
Right.
It's basically fallen off the cliff to the left.
But the one of the worst parts of what's happened in the last 10 years is that, and this has happened in other major cities too, is that the violent crime, Steve, is now expanding out into the suburbs where people used to move to go to escape the worst criminal elements of a city. Now that's come to them.
Yeah, as long as I've been reporting, more than 20 years, I've been reporting on crime and murder in Chicago. And I suppose you could go back to the gangster days in the 20s of crime and murder in Chicago. And for Ray to say that it has gotten exponentially worse in the last few years, that's a high bar. That is a telling statement, because it was already bad to begin with. And with regard to the violence spreading, when we saw the defund the police movement on the wake of the George Floyd riots, the mostly peaceful riots that they had in Minneapolis and all these other places, and the far left said we don't want police brutalizing anybody anymore, despite the fact that the statistics say that police were not brutalizing anybody. It's like minute amount of police abuse. But they defunded the police, and it's one of the things I report on here, law enforcement, and it is in crisis right now.
Well, not only the defund the police movement that started after the George Floyd
riots,
you know, he was killed by the cop there, and the cop was convicted. Chauvin,
yes,
Derek Chauvin, yeah,
and then we know what happened. That was the worst overreaction to anything I've seen in my life on the American political scene. Absolutely. You had and it was all because of the imagery. It was emotionally driven. It wasn't factually driven. But what happened with George Floyd, who was a career criminal, George Floyd I'm talking about. Now, you don't put your knee on a man's neck for 10 minutes. Is that what it was?
11.
Okay. When he's subdued, facing the pavement with handcuffs on his back, there's no need to. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So whether he died of fentanyl overdose or whether he died of asphyxiation because Chauvin was basically kneeling on his neck, which he was found guilty of.
That's correct.
That's really that second, it's not what I'm talking about. My main point here is that then America overreacted against the police, and the results are, we're seeing it today, as if, as you say, Steve, as if the police are a bunch of racist pigs out there running wild all over America, when we knew that that wasn't true.
That's right.
And when you defund the police, you take the police out of even the poorer communities, the minority communities, and you see crime go skyrocketing in even many inner-city African-American communities. One other thing to that. Mm-hmm. Not only the defunding of the police, which is nuts, mm-hmm. and counterproductive to safety for the public, and also you're disrespecting law enforcement. We've taught that, too. Now we see people, especially these kids, just being openly belligerent to cops. We were all raised, right? You respect law and order, and if a police officer says anything, yes, sir, no, sir. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now they're told, you tell the cop what to do with it.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yep.
But anyway, I digress. Right. The other element here is the DAs.
Yep.
So you got the law enforcement police part of it, and then you have the DAs who were elected, George Soros funded DAs who believe in social justice, and they define social justice as, if you commit a crime and you're a person of color, you don't go to jail because that's participating in systemic racism. Doesn't matter what you do. Doesn't matter how violent you are, how many crimes you have, you don't deserve to go and serve any time because you're a victim. Mm-hmm. That's the way these people think. It's warped. It's whacked out. But that's the Soros worldview.
They have been told since identity politics started creeping up with Barack Obama, if not before, that they are victims. Therefore,
who's been told that?
The black community. Well, every identity group. If you're a victim, if you're gay, you're a victim. If you're black, you're
victim of what?
Of racism or sexism,
right,
or what? It doesn't matter, because they want to keep them victimized, because they keep them angry. And that's what happened during all these racial riots. Is they were told, in fact, with George Floyd was legitimately a police shooting, a bad cop.
Police brutality.
But remember who was Brown? What was his name?
Michael Brown. Chicago. I mean, in St. Louis.
They made that whole scenario up. Hands up, don't shoot. It was a lie.
Oh, I know. Wasn't true.
But they do it so that they can keep victim, they keep the people angry. When they keep the people angry, they keep in power.
But what I'm saying is, and I think it's becoming obvious now, Ray, is these cries of social injustice and racism and police brutality being rampant, that's what the left says, all that does is end up being making things worse for the very people that these leftist organizations say they are there to be the defender of. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sure. Look, if everything is racism, then nothing is racism. If everything is prejudice, then nothing is prejudice, right? So part of the recipe here is to turn it into everything virtually is racism and prejudice, which causes people, I think, in their reaction against that, everybody knows that can't possibly be right.
Right.
One part of the reaction then is that people tend to overlook that there are some cases out there that truly are bad, but we just say we don't want to pay any attention to it because look what the people on the other side are shouting. It's a counterproductive. It actually, instead of bringing people together, it destroys any hope of social unity.
And I would submit that that is a feature, not a bug. In software engineering, you have features of when you do a program, you have features. It does. It's supposed to do this. And sometimes a bug will come up. It made a mistake, and this is a consequence of it. With the chaos we're seeing, this was engineered to create the chaos. The chaos and the police shortages is not an unintended consequence of the social justice movement. It is the purpose.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues. That's the name of this show. on the American Family Radio Network. We got 5 minutes left. I'm Tim with Fred, Steve, and Ray. Go ahead, Steve.
All right. While the southern border is leaking people, we have a German family who came to this country legally and decided they wanted to come to homeschool their kids. They entered the country in 2008 because in Germany, homeschooling is illegal.
I was shocked at that, really.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The kids will be taken away from you if you homeschool your kids in Germany. And so this family came here, a family of they had 5 kids when they came, 2 more now. And they've been here for the last 15 years homeschooling their kids. Now, the Biden administration wants to kick them out. It's given them just 2 or 3 weeks to get their passports in order. You're going home. Now, as Fred quipped not long ago, maybe they should just go to Mexico and cross the border to be able to stay wherever they want. But
that's true.
But I want you to hear a little bit from this. There's they have a lawyer. He's with the Legal Homeschool Legal Defense Fund, HSLDA. And
Association.
Thank you. His name is Kevin Bodden. You're going to hear from him. And the name of this family is the Romaike family in Uwe and Hannelore. You're going to hear a little bit from Uwe Romaike as well. This is Cut 10.
The Romaike family has entered the country lawfully. They've been here lawfully for 15 years.
Yes.
They want to stay here lawfully, and there's a way to make that happen. So this is not a case other than a family following the rule of law, which is what we have in the United States, as you well know, and wanting to continue to follow the rule of law to stay here. And so the Biden administration can make that happen. The agencies can make it happen, and we're asking them to simply do just that.
Uwe, why you guys? Why were you chosen for deportation at this point? What are they telling you?
Well, the thing is, they don't tell us anything. We don't really know why. We wonder that ourselves because we cannot understand.
It's a German, just to review, that's a German family who moved here 15 years ago because they wanted to homeschool their kids, and in Germany, as you say, they don't allow that. So America does. Whoa, you talk about we take our freedom and liberty for granted because I didn't. You would think a European country like Germany, now modern day Germany, you would have the same freedoms we would have in the U.S. In Canada, can you homeschool, friend?
You can. Yes, you can.
Okay. Canada is more free than Germany then in that mm-hmm. respect. So this family, it's a big family. How many of them are there?
Well, now there's 7 kids.
What's her name? Because I would ask our folks to pray for them.
Romaike. Romaike. It's spelled R-O-M-E-I-K-E.
Do we have a story Romaike. On our on our news service?
We will put one up if we don't. I think. Okay. Yeah. In fact, we
have been covering them.
Yeah.
Okay.
It goes all the way
American
back.
Family News.
Yes,
American
we have
Family
been
News.
Covering them for 15 years, actually,
yeah.
because at one point when they were still in Germany, the state came and took the kids into state custody, saying, we want these children to be raised with state secular values. So we don't want kids with Christian values. We don't want kids being taught that homosexuality is a sin.
Well, in my view, you know, this is a parental, this is, in my view, this is the American constitutional view. This is, you don't have the right to take kids from their parents. I don't care what reason you say, education or health or otherwise.
Except in rare, rare cases of abuse.
Oh, yes. Yes, I would agree with that. But I'm talking about just
philosophical worldview.
Yeah, people want to homeschool their kids. They should be free to do that. And they are in America and they are in Canada, thank God. All right. Thank you, Ray. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, Tim.
So you're not on Thursday? You're flying over some great lake somewhere?
That's right. Flying over a Lake Ontario somewhere.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.